Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is one of our deep dive episodes, one of our Bacta tanks of talk. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Kat Navsok, swimming in that healing juice.
Bacta should sound so warm, so refreshing, so welcoming, and we always find a way to make it sound a little sketchy.
Actually, all these years, I've never had that discussion. All these years. Do you think Bacta is a nice, gooey, warm, or is it like just a shocking cold?
Oh, I've always thought of it as like very amniotic. Like you're like it's like you're being cradled by nice, warm fluid that there's nothing gross about it. But every time I try to say it, it comes out weird.
Look, it's a weird concept, but because I think I'd love that. I would love just like I'm, you know, I'd love getting a massage when I fall asleep. I fall asleep getting haircuts. Like I think,
that's just punk rock. That's dangerous to fall asleep during a haircut.
Yeah, that's great.
How you end up in a Bacta tank when you fall asleep during a haircut. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we are very excited to dive in. We are going to be talking about, you know, this year that's coming up, 2022. As we record, it is right around the corner. There's so much Star Wars that is coming to us in 2022, kind of almost unprecedented. I'm going to go that far. So we're going to dive into what we're looking forward to and kind of how we're feeling about fans, about ourselves in our relationship with the Star Wars as fans. Before we dive into that, we want to talk to you about Audible. You can get a free audiobook download in a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Tempest Runner by Kevin Scott. You can get some insight on one of the big bads of the High Republic era. If you want to do that, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. But there is still more.
There is more. We have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is now offering 35% off across their website. If you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Secrets of the Sith. Oh, it's a great book. We love that one there. Learn all about the Sith from Sheev's point of view. Again, use the link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
That's right. We've been recommending The Secrets of the Sith since around Halloween, and we just like it that much. We'll recommend some other books as well.
It's a great one. Love that one.
It's great for Halloween, keeping the spirit of Halloween in your heart all year round, like you learn in the really spooky version of A Christmas Carol.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, let's dive in. It's going to be Halloween around the corner. It's part of the new year. It's a big, big year for Star Wars coming up, Ken. The shows, the books, we're going to look at all those things and our very own feelings. I want to start in the land of feelings. Obviously, you know, we've been doing this podcast for over 6 years now. We're both big Star Wars fans. I think we always will be. But like many fans, we've ebbed and flowed over the years. So I'm just curious where you are at in your fandom right now. Is this a high point? And if so, why?
Man, it's an exciting fever pitch. I'm gearing up like what's the opposite of a fun version of war? Like a, I guess just party. I guess those are parties. I don't know. But I feel as though we're on the cusp of just a wonderful year, which is what we're going to be discussing. But the flip side of that is, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, is I also discovered Force Center aside, which is this wonderful, not even Force Center aside, it's this wonderful bubble you and I love crawling into every week. And often, after all the work is done, I'll still put on a Star Wars film as a fan, right? Like Force Center, yeah. We're fans doing this. But point being, we're currently studying the final two episodes of season four, The Clone Wars, and I've got that on it. But other times I'll be like, ah, man, I totally just want to watch Solo. That still happens weekly with me. So going into 2022, I'm so excited for what's coming. But my fandom is also slightly more private, a little more narrow focused on my own joy and the joy of those who just kind of not get Star Wars, but see Star Wars the same way I do, which I try to, which leaves open many interpretations of Star Wars, and yours is yours. But I just want to focus on that and what we do here at Force Center and, the community around that, because I can really get brought down by the overwhelming volume of bad faith, pundits, critics, discourse, online conversation, friends texting me, and it distracts my own joy. So by saying slightly more private, it's gotten to the point where actually we'll admit this, Joseph, like even this week as we record, I'm having what you and I joke off air is those infrastructure weeks where I'm rearranging my office. I'm clearing out a lot of clothes. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff going. And the reason for that is I'm finding myself wanting to wear less and less Star Wars stuff publicly.
Okay.
And that's sometimes that's I'm sad about that. Other times I got my hat, I wear my hat and I was getting tested for COVID last week and the lady checking me in and she goes, there you go. You can go wait over there. She goes, by the way, I really love that hat. Rebels all the way. And I was like, yeah, great. Airline flying it, Dulles out of Dulles airport. Hey, nice hat, man. Love that. So I'm there for that. But where Star Wars socks, t-shirts, all those kind of things. I'm contracting a little bit on that. And I did this before with baseball, big baseball. Okay. I'm a big baseball fan. And in 1996, my beloved New York Yankees, the evil empire to many other people, but my Yankees finally won the World Series for the first time since 1978. I'd been waiting as a kid growing up in the 80s for this to happen. It was such an emotional experience. And I had Yankee gear, Yankee shirts, Yankee hats, Yankee socks, Yankee gloves. They won. And then a lot of it suddenly turned to, oh, you got that hat on. You must be a front runner. Oh, you're not a real fan. All that kind of stuff started popping up. And I did not own a Yankee hat from 1997 to 2015. Put it all away. Got rid of it. I was like, you know what? I'm a Yankee fan. I know I'm a Yankee fan. I don't need to tell the world, and I don't need the world to tell me what was wrong about it. And I'm slightly in that realm. It was Star Wars going into this wonderful year because I just want to enjoy it as best I can for myself and those around me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense of wanting to preserve what is joyful about it for you. Makes a ton of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm kind of in a similar place. This is definitely a high point for me. We're going to talk about all of the things that are coming to our screens that I never thought was possible. And that's a big part of the joy, how much I'm enjoying High Republic, being in the middle of this, you know, long narrative where anything can happen kind of thing. A lot of like really storytelling reasons that I'm excited. But also just after all these years of doing Force Center, I think it's made me really appreciate the levels of Star Wars or the tones of Star Wars. I sometimes talk about the tension. I really love that one of the things in my opinion that makes Star Wars unique is this great tension between being this deep mythic philosophical ideas of how to be the best individual you can be, how to be the best member of a community you can be, all of those great big important ideas mixed with just this pulpy adventure serial B movie. Let's get into weird space cars and race. And doesn't that guy look cool in armor? And you know what's going to shoot out of his knee next? And just, I'm finding myself really attaching to both the life assistance of what do these big ideas mean? These big ideas aren't necessarily unique to Star Wars. Where else do I see them in other media, in other parts of my life, in other moments of my life? So really that depth. And then also just really giving myself permission to just have that joy of the aesthetic, of the style, of just the mood and the feeling. And I think in some ways, that's what I'm really excited about. As we're recording, we're about to get to see Boba Fett this week. Mm. And I'm excited for the big ideas that we're going to discuss. But a big part of me is just like, I just get to go live in that strange galaxy. And I just, no matter how much different opinions or frustration or ups and downs or should they do this or what did who do, blah, 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 blah. I like the way that galaxy feels and I want to sit in it, and I get to sit in this galaxy so much.
I love that. Sitting at the table with Boba Fett.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it just is. It's one of the powers of Star Wars to me. It's a unique mood and flavor. It's got many moods and flavors within it. But it's just, I am intrigued by it. I am compelled by it. You know, when you see a snippet of it, we were talking the other week about like just seeing Star Wars, randomly pop up on television. Like I have this, on streaming. Yeah. I own these movies on Amazon. Yeah. I have multiple formats, but it's just like, you're compelled by it. And that's the way I'm feeling right now of just like, I want to just spend more time in it.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's weird. We're releasing this after Boba Fett, but recording it before. So, yes. Hey, it was all great, everybody. No, but I'm literally like anticipating 11:59 and 59 seconds of something that I get to enjoy. Cause, it's been a lifetime of love leading to something brand new. I don't take that for granted ever.
Yeah, that mix of old and new, I really think is there, and that's exciting too. You touched on this, the threats to dousing the flame. I feel like you said that for you, the risk of encountering lots of anger in that or snark in that sort of anger and snark, yeah, intruding on your joy, or just maybe what you're saying with the clothes of just wanting to choose when you engage in a conversation so you don't end up in lots of combative conversations. Is that the main threat to your fandom?
Yeah. Your specific question is, so are there any threats to dousing the flame, right? And here's the threat. It's myself. I'm the threat to dousing the flame because we choose to engage with what we engage with. And I've joked on the show and said before, not even jokingly, almost bragged about having every word in Star Wars muted online. And I've done that for various reasons, but it isn't about them. It's about me, right? And how I can't turn away from those feelings. It's not the argument. I'm not a person who loves to argue. We know friends who love to roll up their sleeves and let's go get in a Twitter fight. And God bless them. I don't have that. I take it very personal. Like an old story from the job. I won't go into my old day job, but like my regional director was asking me about this incident. He goes, when this happened, you probably drove home really angry. And I said, Nick, I drove home crying. And I drove home crying because I took it so personal and I was hurt. And he goes, oh, you're like me. And that's how I am with some of the Star Wars stuff. I get so angry when I see some of the tweets or sometimes had something recently happened to me at a bar after a trivia show where an old friend said something. I wanted to clock him in the face because it was so disrespectful to my views on Star Wars. But that's not him. That's me. I choose how far I want to carry that. Am I Cersei Lannister choosing violence today or do I try to work? And constant. And that's what I mean by that. So that's always going to exist. It always has existed. You and I survived the prequel wars. We were there, as your great stand-up bit always talks about. I can handle that, but I know when I can't handle it anymore and it affects my joy. And I'm over there stewing in the corner, and that person who said that thing to me doesn't care. They've moved on. I've got to choose to no longer sit in the corner so that I can focus on new Star Wars. Holy moly, we got just abundance of Star Wars stuff, and I'm going to choose to focus on that, not what people are saying about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's very wise, and it's always the weird, ironic, darkly funny truth of Star Wars anger of like, if only this thing that we're extremely angry over had a lot of insights on how to best handle anger. Yeah, that movie where they talk about anger just being this shortcut to power, but being utterly empty, that one's the best, and the other one sucks. As always, for me, it isn't about different opinions. I actually really crave different opinions. So I like going on social media and seeing what people think. I really want to know what other people think. And in the threat to dousing the flame for me is, as you said so well, my reaction to the way people discuss. Like, I never care if somebody likes something different than me. But I take such umbrage when people express their opinions with anger or sort of with derision, if they didn't like something, being derisive towards people who did. Mm-hmm. That and I then get caught up in that anger cycle. And yeah, I'm not. Every once in a while, I have done a passive-aggressive subtweet in the past. maybe every once in a while, years ago, an aggressive tweet. But yeah, I have no interest in fighting. I have no interest in keeping the circle going. If at all possible, want to foster a world where people can say, I didn't like it and here's why. And then I can go, that's really interesting. I did like it and here's why. And hopefully we learn a little bit and have that great perspective of it's art. It can be good or bad to either of us and it doesn't matter. I want that so much. But the danger is when I see a really snarky, angry expression of an opinion, yeah, that it takes me away from my joy and gets me into a cycle. Yeah. And you're right. It is totally on me to just go use all of the wisdom that I've gained from Star Wars. I'm going to try just picturing different Jedi, right? Because you can see Anakin logging on to space Twitter and saying, you know what? They said what about pod racing? Kenobi just being like, Anakin, look at here's a meme of me doing something disgusting. Like, yeah. Who cares? Is that what your life is about? What somebody, you know, what somebody else thinks? Is that what your life is about? Like, I got to picture the Kenobi Anakin on social media and be the Kenobi, not the Anakin.
First of all, I love like a late teens Anakin being like, it is wizard and that is a fact.
And anybody who doesn't like it is a bleep.
Anakin, put down the phone.
Yes. You can choose whether or not to quote tweet that.
Some people don't think it's wizard.
Yes, and that's fine too. Yeah, so I think what you're saying is finding ways to just preserve joy, because I think that's the other thing too, is sometimes I want to know what other people think, but then I also want to just preserve my joy, and that for me is really about managing my time and my emotions on social media.
Yeah, because we got a tidal wave of Star Wars coming, and I'm so excited for it that I'm working really hard to be like, I don't care. Not that I don't care about the other person, their opinion, but like you said, they can have theirs. I've got to go live with just mine right now.
Yeah. And I know people have encountered negative things with Star Wars fans in person, and that certainly does happen. But also like with what you're saying about some of the interactions you had when I got my booster shot, there was the dude with an amazing Boba Fett tattoo. Oh, right. And I just complimented the tattoo. And just it's also a reminder that, you know, I think we can be influenced by podcast world and by social media world. There are a lot of people who just like watch a Star Wars and go, I like that.
Yeah.
And that's great. And oftentimes you can just cool shirt, nice hat, awesome tattoo.
Totally.
And go about your day, and that's pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. A little check in on our the state of our own fandom and our hopes for fandom in 2022. But let's get into some of what is actually coming and how we feel about that. So for me, the big news in my mind, Ken, is that 2022 is an unprecedented just volume of Star Wars storytelling on screen, right? Mm-hmm. We've had big movies that dominate the cultural conversation and merchandise. We've even had two movies that came out very close together with The Last Jedi and Solo. But I kind of think this is different. On Disney Plus, we'll have most of Book of Boba Fett, what is currently reported is 12 episodes of Andor, 6 episodes of Kenobi, up to 16 episodes of Bad Batch, and however many episodes of The Mandalorian Season 3. That is just a lot of Star Wars. How do you think you're going to process having that much on-screen Star Wars? What impact is it going to have on you as a fan?
I have trained my whole life for this, Joseph. I've been waiting for this year. This is the most plentiful, bountiful year of Star Wars yet. And that, I mean, in 2012, that day of the sale, I couldn't imagine a day like this, a year like this. And I've watched my friends over in the MCU side of the punditry world have their cake and pie and cheesecake and eat it too. And I've been, you know, happy for them. Waiting, and I don't want 3 Star Wars movies a year, and maybe I still kind of have that opinion, but to have all what you just described, I can't imagine the amount of hours of new Star Wars we got this year, and I am not going to be exhausted by it. I am going to be excited to discuss it every day and watch it every day if I need to. I literally feel as though little Kenny sitting on the playground in 1983 by himself going, no one wants to talk about Y-Wings with me, has been waiting and training for this year.
Yeah, I am flashing back myself to my lonely moment being in the now, I believe, torn down Brookdale Mall in a suburb of Minneapolis in 87 and seeing in the B. Daltons the Starlog magazine celebrating the 10th anniversary of Star Wars and doing the double take because I saw something Star Wars.
Right.
Because Star Wars was gone. And the idea that a time traveler could pop up in that moment in Brookdale Mall and go, there's going to be a Kenobi television show and a Boba Fett at the same time and all this other stuff. Just, yeah, absolute head explosion that a year like this could ever exist.
Man. You're taking me back to the memory of like, I'm staring in my studio here. I have one of the Lord Darth Vader Bendem that I bought in 94, whenever it came out, because I was like, holy crap, there's a Star Wars item on the shelf from that day to now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, so yeah, there's that just sheer excitement. That's definitely, I think, us coming from the perspective of our age and the generation that we grew up in. Sure. And that kind of scarcity
yeah.
approach. to pop culture, into genre things. So that is baked deep into me of like, hey, if you wanted to see a superhero, maybe the Incredible Hulk. maybe he will throw a car. That'll be it. So there's that, oh, I got to gobble up everything because it might go away. Like this pop culture, you know, we grew up in the pop culture depression, the genre depression. Like, you got to hoard that. But I think scarcity, the idea of scarcity is, like, for me, the key word to approaching this year, because some of my joy, like you and I are talking about, comes from growing up with, as there was not a lot of Star Wars. You really exploded that. But on screen, there is just very little Star Wars. And now there's also that discussion of like, yeah, but that's actually what made it so powerful, is it's gone forever and then it comes back, and then it's gone forever and then it comes back. And is scarcity one of the things that makes Star Wars special? And for me, I just really want to embrace that as that's a very interesting and valid conversation, but it can't be the metric by which I enjoy this year, because I just have to accept that it doesn't really matter whether scarcity is one of the things that makes Star Wars special to me or not, because the world evolves and the world changes, and I want to let go of the past, and we don't have scarcity right now. We might again in the future, but what we have right now is variety. Mm-hmm. And I want to be excited as a fan for the variety, because I think Kenobi is going to be a real different kind of story. I think Andor, I'm really predicting, is going to be like something we've never seen before. Bad Batch is charting new territory. You know, Mandalorian season 3, we kind of have next to no confirmation of what that even is going to be, if it's going to even feel or look like the structure of the show was. There's so many different approaches to Star Wars coming, and I really want to center myself on it, variety being the thing of value in 2022.
That's a great approach, because look, I think there's I'm so excited, literally could watch and talk about it every day, practically do with Force Center. But yeah, at the end of the year, I'm wondering, going into 2023, am I going to be, let me catch my breath, because sometimes I'm like that with the novels, right? You and I joke.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Like, and I'm can't wait for this next big wave of High Republic. But even Grace said something to me the other day at the house. She goes, "Oh, there's this book I think you should read." And she kind of joked, "Not that you're going to read it." But I wanted to answer, "Well, I can't." Because anytime I try to pick up a book, I have to, quote unquote, have to read and study a Star Wars book, which I'm fortunate to do. But I'm now, to your point a little bit, Joseph, like, okay, how am I going to feel at the end of this year? My prediction is good, but come December, am I going to be like, all right, it's still happening? I'm curious to test my own fandom in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the other thing that can be like really exciting about it is thinking about evolution, right? Because, you can always make your own headcanon. And if people are like, I like the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy and that's it, and I ignore the rest, fine. That you can always look at it that way. But if you want to kind of embrace all of the Star Wars storytelling and all of the emotional canon, that great phrase that you coined, Ken, it's so exciting to think about, like, well, watch Rogue One now, because after Andor comes out, Rogue One, there's parts of Rogue One that are going to hit different. Watch every Kenobi moment now, because there are moments that might hit different, like that this new stuff is going to speak to the old stuff and create all this interesting web of ideas and emotions. And I'm looking forward to that as well.
I love that. Yeah, you said something similar going into Rise of Skywalker. I can't remember the exact quote, but I remember it shook me to my core. in a good way. I'm just like, oh, you're right. I'll never see the other movies the same way again.
Yeah, I mean, we were doing our prep or like our last episode before we saw Rise of Skywalker of, you know, and I found my notes for that one. It's very intriguing. And yeah, and it's like, yeah, it's going to recontextualize Last Jedi, possibly the same way, you know, Return of the Jedi did for Empire Strikes Back and all those things. Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that.
But it's specifically for a lot of fans. Again, we always speak kind of from our generation. We try to talk about all generations, but from like, I'm never going to be able to watch New Hope and see Alec Guinness's performance there and not think about what I'm about to see in Kenobi. It blows my mind.
Right.
That's,
I mean,
40 plus years of something I know by heart that I'm going to be like, that has new meaning.
Yeah. And for me, like, I like that and I want to embrace that. And I know for some fans, like, they just want those movies to be those movies. And I think that's great. Is you can just choose that. If Kenobi's not for you, there's lots of opportunities to not watch it. So we've dabbled into this, but I want to get into it. So some pop culture pundits, some fans, I think, will say that this is too much Star Wars because this is more than there's ever been on screen. Are you braced for that? Is this a part of what you're talking about at the top, to just let your joy be your joy and not engage with some of that negativity?
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm gonna mute them. Gonna block them. Got to mute them. No, look, and it's again going to you even kind of raised the question: is that possible? We might know. Maybe I change my opinion at the end of the year. Again, joking, but prediction: no. I'm braced for it because I'm already braced for it because, we've been bracing for it since 2012, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they're not going to do, oh God, this Kenobi series, I can't wait for it to come out. I absolutely want it to be a success without a doubt, but I want it to be something no one can expect, because I have a lot of friends who aren't even on Twitter anymore who are texting me. Why are they doing that? Because that's such creative bankruptcy. And I'm just like, man, stand by because it's going to be so good. So I'm braced for it. All the stuff I talked up top of how I protected myself and choosing to be braced for that. But it's going to happen. And it's also, at the same time, it's a fair question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a completely fair question. I am a big Marvel fan and I have enjoyed all of the Marvel stuff I've watched. I think almost all of it to me has this like great emotional depth. And even the stuff that doesn't resonate with me as much, I still think is extremely enjoyable. And really, honestly, when I think about it, all of it has resonated with me on an emotional level. So I think the quality of storytelling has been there with Marvel. But there is a lot of, like, I think for me, it has nothing to do with the storytelling. It has to do with the lifestyle. Especially now that Disney Plus is releasing things Tuesday into Wednesday, this weird life schedule, we're like, well, if I don't want Hawkeye spoiled, I got to watch it right away before I even look at social media on Wednesday morning. Yeah. And then I need to make sure to watch it with Sarah, because she'd like to see it too, but she has, a day job. She can't be like, sorry. I'll be in at 10. I'm watching Hawk. So it can just be a lot to keep up with in terms of functionally, not content even,
Yeah.
So I'm aware of that. The other thing for me is, Star Wars has always had this spirit that I think really emanates from Lucas and the original team of creative people, that Star Wars always says, why not? Let's try it. Let's go there and see what's over there. And I think this is just another aspect of it, of like, well, what is going to happen when there's this much different shows, different ideas, different eras talking to one another? Like, let's try it. Why not? Mm. So from the creative side, it's got this, like, this is the moment we're in, in culture, in the media, where let's try it instead of going, no, it can't be done. Yeah. Let's lift that X-wing and see what happens. Then the other big thing for me is, it is such a valid question of, like, is this too much reliance on this big IP? Is there room for other things? Will the lack of scarcity make it less special? All those things are great, valid discussions, but a huge key thing for me is, this moment might go away. Mm. This moment is happening because of streaming services, right?
Yeah.
And I am of the opinion that, Netflix has been around for a long time, so they know what they want the result of a show to be. That's why they get canceled, right? Yeah. They want to have a huge diversity of shows. They want shows that appeal to everyone, and they want them to drive new subscribers. And if they don't, they get axed. Yeah. So we kind of know Netflix. We don't know Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. We don't know Paramount Plus. We don't know exactly how Disney Plus is saying this was a success, because they want to drive new subscribers, but they also want to keep all of us talking about it, right? And they want to find the next Grogu.
Yeah.
You know, And I think that there is a possibility that the streaming services find some balance and go, we actually want to put a lot more time and a lot more merch behind fewer shows, and that's our sweet spot. So I'm also really treasuring this of like, this is a weird, beautiful year that might be the future for a long time, or it might go away in 2023.
It's a great point, because look, Lucasfilm itself has already, you know, changed things around a bit, right? Remember, your standalones, this and that, and the rumored end of projects announced, not happening. A lot of that's for various different reasons, but you're talking about the business aspect. You're right. Again, at the end of the year, I look at like Bad Batch, which it did not, I can't imagine did as big numbers, and it did not get the pop culture water cooler conversation going as much as Mando. I don't think they expected it. I didn't expect that too, but maybe at some point someone above goes, hey, why is this not moving the needle? We only need to move needles.
Yeah. And
maybe that stuff starts to contract a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we're still in the, it's easy to look at it as, from our perspective, Disney Plus has been around for, you know, over 2 years now. Like, that pie is still sitting in the window cooling, you know, figuring out exactly how it's going to settle in my mind. Mm. All right. With all that in mind, let's take a look at the actual big shows. We can put aside any predictions or speculations unless you want to. But I'm really curious about what's, in a few words, exciting about each of them. Mm. So let's start with Andor. For you, Ken, what is really exciting about Andor as a Star Wars fan?
To me, it's analyzing the true heart of the rebellion. You know, not predicting or speculating, but just potential themes and why I want to sit down and watch that show. We've talked a lot about how I just love Diego Luna's casting Andor. I love that time period. The rebellion against the Empire is my favorite thing about Star Wars. But I just want to see the true heart of the rebellion. And the personal sacrifices and perhaps the moral bending in the name of good and what that does and how that you talk about how this might recontextualize or add depth to Rogue One. And also, by the way, pew, pew, pew. I'm expecting some good Star Wars action with some stormtroopers exploding and flying across my screen.
Absolutely. I think that's well said. I think for me, it is two things. One of the keywords for Andor is espionage. Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of spy stories, everything from the more grounded James Bond, the more big, bold, sensational, fun James Bond, but also Jason Bourne and a little bit more of the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, very, very grounded. Who knows what, when, and how can you very subtly discover your opponent's emotions and press on them to get them to accidentally say a thing they shouldn't. Every kind of espionage, you know, from James Bond blowing up large golden things,
yeah,
to the subtle pressure points. The fact that that whole genre of espionage is going to be married with Star Wars. I think there's going to be some, you know, big explosions and some chases and then stormtroopers are going to fly and that's going to be great and it should be there. But living in that world where this isn't all out open war right now. Mm-hmm. What is the make or break for the rebellion is information. Who has it? How do you get it? That's so thrilling to me because I think it's going to be more different than maybe some people are expecting.
Yeah, 100%. And be clear, I'm not expecting 30 X-Wings on a Star Destroyer. But who knows? But no, that would not.
You never know.
You never know. But that would not sync up necessarily with the Battle of Scarif and Battle of Yavin. But yeah, I think I downloading files with a lot of tension and then flipping around to shoot a stormtrooper right in the face. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah, it sounds so exciting. And then for me, one of the things I've really hooked into on my last couple of viewings of Rogue One is how much I feel like Rogue One is a story about the rebellion almost defeating itself. That the rebellion almost gives in to apathy and cynicism. And I think that's just such a fascinating, great thing to look at, because I think it so translates to real life, from big political things to everyday things. I have to fight apathy and cynicism every day, yeah, in myself to get the things I want to do done. So to see a fun Star Wars adventure where a good person like Cassian Andor is trying to keep stay true to the Northern Light of why he's doing this, well, fighting all that apathy and cynicism, it sounds just really rich.
I love it.
All just, right. Let's go ahead. You were going to say something more?
Andor still has a special place in my heart. Cannot wait.
Yeah. And I think another very exciting thing about it is, you know, if the reports are true about the number of episodes, that means a different story structure. A lot of these of the Marvel shows that are about six episodes, I feel like they have felt like television. But in general, they have followed some very traditional beats where the two episodes are divided into act one, act two, act three. Mm-hmm. And sort of structurally, ultimately, you have a movie like story. I think there, it's very interesting to going to be interesting to see how Andor moves structurally.
That's absolutely a great point. Especially, I felt that in Hawkeye, a series I love. But yeah, it's like a great six episodes, but it did feel like, yeah, like I said, a movie stretched out a little bit. Andor, by the nature of 12 episodes, I cannot do that. It's going to be something different. You're right. That's a great point.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's get on to Kenobi, a show that we're a little excited about here on Force Center. Ken, for you, what are the key moments, ideas of Kenobi excitement for you as a fan?
I think a lot of it is summed up in stuff that you and I have been talking about, especially you, president of the Kenobi fan club here at Force Center. since the rumors of the movie and the talks of the movie and things we thought we knew or heard about the movie till now, it is what I sum it all up in the great turning of a chapter in Kenobi's life, and bridging that Revenge of the Sith to New Hope gap, and how this idea of these facing failure, processing failure, trauma, healing, and a moving forward to a new purpose, and rising above all these things that might be there to bring you down. You know, I'm so excited to see how they play that out. If that's the case, right? We try to remain a little loose so we can take what is there for us in the story. But I'm just drawn to that, and why I'm so excited. I think it's so worth diving into and delving into Kenobi during this part of his life. How did that guy go from "you were the chosen one" to "yeah, it's this kid in the desert I've got to protect with everything"? I want to find out what made that page turn.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it. Of obviously, he has a lot to wrestle with and a lot to face in this extremely dark period, having, you know, lost so much, but then finding purpose in Luke and finding peace with his journey. That's huge. Cause it speaks to, you know, the pillars of Star Wars. It speaks to great darkness, great sadness and pain, and then overcoming that, with hope and the possibilities of the future, all that kind of great stuff. I think for me, trying to boil down my Kenobi thoughts, cause we've shared them a lot and we're going to share them more as we build up to the show and the trailers come. I think for me, if somebody had come to me at any point in my life and said, okay, so, you know, in Return of the Jedi, there are a couple of really great lines. There's Vader saying, "Obi-Wan once thought as you did." There is the great Force ghost sits on a log and Obi-Wan tells you, "what I told you was true from a certain point of view." What if you took those two lines and told that story?
Yeah.
And I feel like that is my hopefully responsible speculation, along with many other people, of what this show is, of Obi-Wan coming to terms with his own past, his own part in Anakin's fall, and really wrestling with who is Anakin, who is Vader, how do I move forward in this?
One of the things about Kenobi is we're from this point of view of looking to 2022. And over the years, you and I have given our thoughts on what we think things might be about. And we look at the themes and we try to trace that out. We try to trace out the emotional canon. And sometimes we are way off. And I always kind of joke, man, I'm actually kind of glad I'm way off, because I'm excited about what's there and I should never be too right. Kenobi is perhaps the only show, movie, project that I want to be exactly like I want, like I'm predicting or think, which is dangerous. It's dangerous. And sometimes you and I are really accurate. By the way, I was listening to an old episode leading into, Mando season two, where you basically wrote the scene between Din and Bo-Katan. What if this happens? And I said, I don't know. And you said, well, what about this? And like, it's almost exactly the scene. So I hope you are pinpoint in your accuracy on this show.
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying. And I want surprises, and there will be surprises, because I think for me, there is a big difference between here's what this is going to be about. Here are the challenges that this character is going to face. And I have a lot of hope that those are true. I have no idea the storytelling mechanics by which those things will be confronted and expressed. So I really hope that these are the things that Kenobi confronts. And I'm so excited to be just utterly surprised and blown away by how.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the last thing for me, trying to keep it really to my own fan relationship, is, you know, Ewan McGregor's performance as Kenobi in the prequels just made such an impact on me. I enjoyed it so, so much. Everything from, you know, doing comedy sketches where I figured I can find a way to convince people this is comedy while I'm basically just trying to do Obi-Wan sword fight choreography with a rubber chicken. Like, yeah, that, I can do that. And I think really on a deep level that I didn't fully even understand, really relating to this story of this young man taking truly his first steps, which I was at that same age when the prequels came out. And now to see Ewan McGregor, the guy that I love so much as Obi-Wan Kenobi, taking these middle steps as a middle-aged man, and being in step with him age-wise, you know, in general, that's just really joyful for me. Of like, even if I ended up going, oh, I'm not sure about a lot of the choices they made, I'm going to watch Ewan McGregor be Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Is a middle-aged man struggling through crap. Ah, that sounds great.
Love that. Old men in the desert, we are.
Exactly. Exactly. So move on to Bad Batch Season 2. There's going to be, we suspect from the rumored episode count, a lot of Bad Batch Season 2. It matches Bad Batch Season 1. This is not live action, so it probably won't make as much of a dent, be as loud as some of the others. But what are you looking forward to in Bad Batch Season 2?
Answers. More answers. we love diving into the themes, and I think that's a good place to live. But I got to say, out of all the series out there and all the things coming our way, I look at the how just as much as I look at the why with this show, because it is giving us a chance to go around the galaxy during this key point in the timeline and see how people are reacting to the fall of the Republic, the rise of the Empire, what's going on. And then we might see, you know, does Boba Fett and Cad Bane ever show up? Do we get to see that deleted scene, those things you and I have been talking about? You know, what's the relationship with Omega and Boba Fett? Do we ever deal with that? All those kind of things. So there's big themes of choosing sides and finding new ways forward as things change. Adaption, family, truths, hard truths, identity. Love those themes. But I'm really looking forward to 16 more episodes of going around this galaxy I love and getting some answers.
I think that is very, very good answer. Very good thoughts. And I agree a lot. I think for me, in terms of the like, ooh, what's going to be fun to discuss? What's going to be revealed? It is more about seeing different planets, different communities reacting differently. The sort of the domino effect of the sudden realization of like, oh, the Empire is not just the Republic that's really strong. Yeah. It is cruel, and it is taking things from people. Seeing that story through these eyes. The continuing exploration of what does it mean to be a clone? What does it mean to have had an identity and then had that identity of being a soldier taken from you? There aren't as many clones in the galaxy anymore. Omega and her possible relationship to Boba Fett. All that stuff is really fascinating and really interesting. But I think, honestly, my number one for Bad Batch Season 2 of why I'm excited for it is I just want to know what's the gang up to this week. yeah. For me, it's part of what I enjoyed about Bad Batch is a lot of our storytelling is so serialized. It is, you know, one of the critiques of MCU that people can kind of power past the ideas of the individual stories and just be really excited about how does that connect to what's next or you know, what Easter egg did you see? I think sometimes that's unfair. I think the stories all have a ton of value, but they are very serialized. And Bad Batch Season 1, it took its time and very slowly told a big picture story. And in some ways went back to a little bit more of an older school of entertainment of, hey, you like these characters. They're going to have one of their adventures this week. You know, that used to be the way so much television was of what's going on in the hospital this week. What case is this detective solving this week? And there's a joy in that to me because it's a little bit more rare. And the Bad Batch characters are just so charming. I'd be happy if one episode was they have a really great lunch on an exotic planet because I just want to spend time with them.
You know what? They truly are the Seinfeld of the galaxy. I just want to see what they're up to. What restaurant are they stuck in this week? But I'm with you on that. And I think even I was at the beginning of the Bad Batch so enjoyed it. It ended up being one of my favorites. But like, you have that kind of like, let's do, you know, Mando season one. All right. This Sorkin stuff's great. Where are we going? And it is just kind of where we are in all kinds of fandoms when we consume this content. And I love that Bad Batch was like, we're going to do what we need to do.
Yep. We're going to take it at the tempo that we're going to take it. And to me, that's some of the variety, right? Because I think Kenobi is going to, if it is indeed six episodes, big grand scale, probably kind of foot on the gas for a big grand adventure. It's fun to have that variety.
Yeah.
So moving on then to Mandalorian season three, what are your hopes, dreams as a fan for Mandalorian season three?
I mean, I guess I could talk about the, themes of, the mantle and responsibility of power, especially if Din has a darksaber and doesn't really want it. And maybe he has to adjust to that. And definitely want to see more Darksaber and confronting your past while continuing to build and move yourself forward. Those are big themes. But also, I got to tell you, Joseph, it's just a big, giant, wide-open plane of, huh? I don't know what I'm getting. Grogu and Luke off training? I can't imagine we're going to see that, but who knows? Din, Bo-Katan, the whole crew, what are we going to get? Is Carson Teva going to get his moment in the sun by tracking things down? I just am so the journey we went on for two seasons was in its own way, like you and I discussed, almost its own complete little thing. If the door closes on that final chapter in season two and they never came back, obviously be bummed. I want to get more. But I'd be like, yeah, you know, that was kind of the story, wasn't it? Din and Grogu. That was kind of it. And now we got ability to explore more and put Din in the galaxy at large. I'm excited by that and almost have no expectations, which also going into Boba Fett, I had almost no expectations and it was kind of freeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. That is so exciting about Mandalorian season three, because except for having the Darksaber that he does not want, it felt complete, right? It is a story of Din and Grogu. There's still a story to tell for Din, and that Darksaber makes it feel like, okay, he kind of wrestled with who does he want to be as a person, as a bounty hunter. What is the a little bit of the truth of his past? He learned so much about himself by bonding with his child and letting go because it's what's best for him. You know, learning to be a good adopted space dad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a great journey. But then I love that it just ends on, okay, what are the conflicts left facing Din? Well, one is, I did not mean to pull this sword from the stone. I do not want it. I refuse the call, but I can't. Okay, kind of. Like, that's so fascinating. It's such an important part of storytelling in the hero's journey, the sort of the refusal of the call, but that's usually kind of an act one thing. So what does that mean when he's kind of in the middle of this? So I can see a version of this where it's like, this is a completely different show and it's got its foot on the gas and it's, you know, Bo-Katan is begrudgingly making him fight for Mandalore, maybe making him fight to keep the Darksaber. So that it could be all about that. He's charging in now. It's the battle for Mandalore. Or it could be like, he's like, I got this Darksaber, but I don't want to deal with it. So I'm going to go back to bounty hunting. In the first several episodes are, he has an adventure. We're slowly building to something. I don't know what it's going to be.
I want the first chapter of season three just to be him at a stone trying to shove the Darksaber back in it. I don't want it.
He ejects it into space. Like, go fight for it then. Go fight for it. Yeah, there's so much. And then, go ahead.
I said, well said on what it could possibly be. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it so far it has had that episodic, and it could be that people get maybe frustrated because they expected it to be a big battle for Mandalore, and it is back to Din having an adventure week. The other thing is, in general, I'm not often a fan of chaos. But I am so fascinated by just what chaos will emerge in our society if they're just like, yeah, no, that was it for Grogu. Yeah, no, he's not gonna, there's not an episode where he goes and visits Jedi school. Like, that's it. Like, I'm sorry, all of the merch that exists in the world now has pictures of Grogu on it. Yeah. It was good while it lasted. That's not the story.
It's a parent teacher conference day is the third episode.
I think just it's darkly humorous to me of like a lot of people fell in love with The Mandalorian who are Star Wars fans, but not all in or aren't Star Wars fans. And they just like this show, and which makes them Star Wars fans, I should say. Yeah. But this is their thing, right? They go, oh, all right, Mandalorian's coming back. That's the Baby Yoda show. Let's go. What do you mean there's no Baby Yoda?
No Yoda. Yeah.
That's what, you know, the just the deafening chorus of, you know, I would like to see the baby gifts and memes. And amazing.
Look, I have a dark sense of humor, too, at times. And I would. Yeah, that's it. Just poof. Gone. Maybe 10 years from now, we get a follow up series.
Yeah. And I know there are rumors floating about, you know, Grogu's agents are in talks. I haven't looked at I know there's. Yeah. Suspicions and all that, but we shall see. It is fascinating. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to look ahead at some of the other exciting stuff, because that isn't all. There's so much coming in 2022. We'll be back in a moment.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we are back to continue looking ahead to all the exciting Star Wars stuff that is coming towards us in 2022. We have, of course, The High Republic continuing, Ken. The books and the comics are rolling on. We're heading into the final wave of Phase 1. Wave 3 of Phase 1. Announced books include, but are definitely not limited to, The Fallen Star by Claudia Gray, Midnight Horizon by Daniel Jose Older, and Mission to Disaster by Justina Ireland. In order to talk about going ahead, I want to look back. What impact did The High Republic make on you as a fan in 2021? And based on that, what are you hoping for in 2022?
Yeah, this is personal to me as a fan. It made me, it challenged me to go into an era of Star Wars in which I really kind of knew nothing about other than some of the names, the weapons, and an occasional planet. It was brand new territory, brand new era. And I know a lot of other people have been really waiting for that, something that I get. And I knew we'd get there eventually. But going into the High Republic, I was like, I don't know. I kind of love living in familiar territory. If we want to go to Endor again, I'd be good with that. Like, it's not that I don't like to be challenged or changed in any way, shape, or form. I just, as a Star Wars fan, I'm so happy, as I said many times before, in this classic trilogy era, sequel trilogy era, prequel era. I love those eras. Don't need to go anywhere else. But we went there. 200 years, you know, not 1,000, not 500, 200 years. And it was just a wonderful experience for me because I was able to let go of some of the things that I thought I knew or, comfort, areas of comfort, and then explore what not only these stories are about, but what I feel Star Wars is really about. This hope, community, the symbiotic nature and things and this analyzing the galaxy already has expanded, but now it's really growing and firming into the galaxy we know. And how can we do that right? And what can go wrong? And how that can reflect back on our own times and our own society. I always say, and you and I have talked, but it's like, this is a story about post-war America in a lot of ways for me that I connect with. That's my interpretation of it. And that came from these books and these comics and all of the multimedia around it. It challenged me and challenge accepted. And I feel I grew as a Star Wars fan because of it.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely great. I love your post-war analogy. I think that it's definitely there of post-World War II with a new glorious age. I think there's also a lot there that Lena So, the Chancellor's great works, really remind me of FDR's New Deal, of that. Like, we are going to really rethink the way we look at society, and we're going to rethink it from the perspective of we are all benefited by helping one another. Mm-hmm. And how fragile that is, how much that is the Star Wars philosophy, how much that is the Jedi philosophy, Lena So trying to make that the philosophy of the galaxy, and the Nile representing this different view of the dark side of everybody is in it for yourself. And anybody who tells you otherwise is a fool. It's a zero sum game. If anybody else has something, they're taking it from you. Use your strength. Strength's the only thing that matters. These ideals are so easy to puncture that all those ideals, they tie to everything else in Star Wars, but putting them in this new era where event wise, character wise, almost anything can happen, it makes them just really rich and powerful in a great new way into these big ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think for me as a fan, it's scratching an itch that I've had for a long time, which is to just spend a lot of quality time with Jedi as individuals. I know there's, some great stuff in the EU that did that as well. But for me in this modern canon, having Jedi where like anything can happen to them. And that has ended up being a big part of fans' relationship is the fear of falling in love with a Jedi who will die because they can. It's not like, Kenobi's not going to die in Kenobi. He can't unless he comes back. So I think that that is exciting. The anything can happen. But for me, that the idea of seeing Jedi as individuals of like, we have this group philosophy. Some of it is clear. Some of it is open for interpretation. And we're all trying our best as a group to adhere to these values. But then we're also individuals who need to find ourselves, and we are constantly challenged. We are striving to stay on this path of light, which is not even remotely easy for even the best of us to do. Mm-hmm. So we're all going to stumble in our own different ways. And it celebrates the Jedi as like these, you know, cool heroes with lightsabers and amazing abilities, but then also just really teases out this idea that they are metaphors for all of us. If we all have power, mm-hmm. we're all, you know, we all can try to be our best self, but we're going to stumble. And, you know, how did all these different individual Jedi handle it when they stumble?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to look at the Jedi like that. I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm thinking of like superheroes too. We all might think of there's no way I can be Iron Man or Captain America, but really they're us in a way, right? And it's just a way to highlight the big lessons and the big choices. I love looking at the Jedi that way and you know, seeing what soup Porter Engel makes and eats.
Well, yeah, and they're just so many so that you can, you know, have so many favorites. You can mm-hmm. see different aspects of yourselves in different Jedi, you can explore that there is diversity in the Jedi in every respect, including, you know, just the in-galaxy way of like, there's lots of different ways to interpret Jedi rules. There's lots of different ways to see the Force. That individuality is just fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can almost find your Jedi in a lot of ways, even though you reflected Jedi. In many, but you know, it's like I connect with Elzar Mann more than I maybe even want to at times. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any hopes for any specific individual Jedi in the High Republic in 2022?
I have confidence that the quality will continue. They've just been hitting home runs with every book and comic and everything. So I have confidence in that. It's also hope, but also now on the other side of this, you know, right away, we got Claudia Gray given us the fallen star. That's not ominous at all. So what happens when things start to crumble? What happens when you are challenged and maybe fail or challenged and you act differently than the person next to you, or society starts to crumble, or beacons of hope, literal beacons of hope, fall from the sky? And how do you pick up the pieces? How do you build from that? How do you get through that trauma, that failure, all those kind of big themes? Star Wars boiling down to hope and versus fear, finding hope in fear and the choices you make along the way. We got some big ones coming for the galaxy, and I want to see how this society reacts to it.
Yeah, I think I'm really affected by that of, you know, the storytelling structure that there are, you know, three phases. We are entering the end of phase one, and there's already been a lot of death and destruction and failure. And now we're going into the second phase, where the death and destruction usually is.
Yes.
Which means that it feels like we're in for a rough ride, and there are going to be a lot of bad moments for the galaxy, for the Jedi. So I find myself really brainstorming, thinking about like, I'm really hoping for those individual moments of victory for the Jedi, you know, it's going to take them a while to turn things around. And even at the end of this, since it's leading into the era of the fall of the Republic, that the Jedi and the Republic are going to come out of this whole High Republic story diminished, because that's right. The story. So then asking, you know, what are the victories for the Jedi along the way is really fascinating to me.
Absolutely.
In particular, because in one of the latest books he read, he was struggling with his feelings. I want Reeth Sylas to go on a date with a girl. At least express his feelings.
Love that.
Yeah, share your truth, Reeth. That's what I want. All right. So there isn't just High Republic. There are other big book releases, Ken, including Queen's Hope by E.K. Johnston, Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher, which is going to be featuring Luke Lando in Ochi of Bestoon, and it sounds like a lot of other exciting canon stuff. And then Brotherhood by Mike Chen, focusing on Obi-Wan and Anakin's early days in the Clone Wars once Anakin becomes a knight. The book Padawan by Kirsten White about Obi-Wan's very young days, and many more books, but those are some of the big ones. What's exciting about those novels for you? How do you think that they might expand your fandom?
Oh, man, at this buffet, I'm taking a little bit of everything here. I am really, of all of those, the Mike Chen one, and he's been doing a great job tweeting that little kind of, hints or, you know, cover art, everything, get people excited. I'm interested in this kind of Rise of Skywalker era. I mean, a few years before, obviously, but the sequel era into Rise of Skywalker era storytelling from Adam Christopher and Shadow of the Sith. But I am really excited about E.K. Johnston's Queen's Hope and her being able to bring this Padme trilogy home and into a complicated era with Padme, Revenge of the Sith, where the character's not completely best served all the time. Lucas's decision to focus on the Anakin of it all, which I, in the end of the day, think was right. But, you know, I'm not even just talking about Padme's death, but just there's not a lot of Padme in that film in terms of what she's about and the formation of the rebellion. So a lot of those deleted scenes that are out there to take in, but they're not officially part of the story here. To actually have E.K. Johnston, someone who grew up with a different view on Star Wars than I had because of era, age, perspective, and how looked up to Padme, looked to Padme, and now is a chance to really tell Padme's story. And it was been so fun, Phantom Menace era, Attack of the Clones era, and getting big questions and the Handmaidens. I'm such a fan of these books, really am. But now to go into complicated territory. And I want to see how that will change my perspective on what I think I know and what I do know of Revenge of the Sith and Padme in that era. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I think these books have been so great getting into the heart of Padme, taking this sort of the tip of the iceberg of what an amazing idea Handmaidens are, what an amazing idea it is that Naboo is a culture that elects 14-year-olds, and what does that idea of service mean to somebody like Padme, who comes from that culture, but then also, you know, wants to find her humanity, and have relationships and all that great stuff. And man, has it been the previous book's been great, but in some ways, this is the most rich territory, right? Because we get to see Padme. As you know, Padme is the person who has, in my opinion, the correct answers in the prequel era of look, the government's falling apart and we need to fix the way the government is working and we need to question what's really going on behind the scenes, right? She's the one who's like, it's Dooku. Yeah, it's not disgruntled spice miners, right?
Yeah.
The very, very political episodes of the Clone Wars animated series where she is the one who is really like, I see the value of democracy and I see how it's being eroded. I see what this war is doing. We should absolutely recognize our differences and work them out through negotiation, through peace. So getting to really spend some time, we have those deleted scenes in Revenge of the Sith, but getting to really spend some time with her take on the crumbling of the Republic.
Yeah,
that is, you know, Padme as, you know, the moral compass of the galaxy, that is Padme as, you know, the one of the, you know, architects of what will become the rebellion. But then on the other side, we're going to get to like, how is she really feeling about this relationship with Anakin, right? Like, she does love him. It is a love story, but there's obviously a lot of dysfunction and poor communication going on as well. Yeah. So to really get to hear that perspective from Padme is so exciting.
I wouldn't want to overlook that love story part of it too, to get again, not answers like I got a checklist, but just see E.K. Johnston's interpretation of this character who inspired her for so many years and continues to inspire her, and to see her takes on some of these things. Like I said, complicated territory, even with the relationship with Anakin.
Yeah, and for me, that's what, I know I say that tip of the iceberg phrase a lot, but that's what's fun for me about it is I think that E.K. Johnston and so many other Star Wars creators have looked at what's there and then added more. Like, and for me, you watch Revenge of the Sith and like that moment where Padme says, like, don't you do that. Don't you pull away from me, right? Like that one line speaks to, they've been around and around on this. If she's committed to this relationship, there is joy. There is fear at losing Anakin. But there's this frustration that what is going on with him and why won't he talk to me and why doesn't he want me to reach out to Obi-Wan for help? Like taking what is in the film and extrapolating on that is so exciting.
Love it. Love it. All the other books listed, like I'm excited for all of them, especially Obi-Wan, Anakin, everything. But that one's that's one I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. I'm super excited for the Shadow of the Sith. Just spending time with Luke and Lando on a mission together. If that's all the book was, I'd be excited. But you know, getting into Ochi of Bastoon, you know, some clarity on Ray's early days, possibly the blurb hints at that. I'm really excited about. The other one that I'm just incredibly excited for is Brotherhood. I really love Mike Chen's short story in Empire Strikes Back, A Certain Point of View. And this is a moment that I've been wondering about, thinking about, talking about on Force Center forever.
Yeah.
That moment where Anakin steps into his own, you know, if we're going to get details of, you know, what trial did he actually pass in this canon to accomplish that, the sort of, I think, relief from Kenobi that, oh, he's not, I can still give him my opinions, which he does in the Clone Wars animated series, but he's not my son, which I was never comfortable with. He's my brother now. I'm so interested in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the Shadow of the Sith one, it's so right. Luke and Lando, I guess we just all assume, but it, you know, you ever have like a group of friends and then there's like one guy, there's a connective thread, Han, and then Luke knows Han, but he met Lando through Han and vice versa. But now Han's gone and Luke and Lando get to hang out. It's like, what are they going to talk about? I love that. I love looking at it from that angle.
Yeah, and I know, again, you know, EU readers probably spent a long time with it, which I read some of those books, but not all of them. But this is really, yeah, I remember this one particular time I had a tight network of friends in Minneapolis I'm really grateful for. But, you know, early on, it was all kind of funneling through one or two people. And I still remember this the first time that a person who is a good friend of mine now is like, he called me up and is like, do you want to come over and play games? And I had that like, can I? Because I have only ever seen you with our intermediary friend.
Yeah,
but we can right. We can just play games. No Han, just Luke and Lando.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah, it's a really great point. So a lot to look forward to in those books. Moving on from that, 2022 is also the 20th anniversary of Attack of the Clones. Ken, are you hoping for anything in that general celebration, how much Lucasfilm is going to celebrate Attack of the Clones and what way they're going to celebrate Attack of the Clones?
Justice for Dexter Jetster, all right? We love him here. We think he's great. We think that scene's very important to the heart of the prequels. I want at Celebration, and I want like a Dexter Jetster diner pop-up inside the convention floor where you can go in and dine, get a cup of Jawa juice.
Yeah, absolutely. I am totally on board with that, of getting some quality Dexter's Diner time.
Yeah, yeah. But other stuff out there, too. Yeah, I did, just celebrating just the absolute sci-fi weirdness of that film and just celebrating what that was and celebrating what it is. Kenobi the Private Eye, Dooku's true place in the franchise and in our hearts as fans of what he represents. And just the wild craziness that is that movie that I think over the years I've appreciated more and more. And there's still moments in there that might challenge me, but I don't focus on those as much. I'll take a 3PO bad joke to have Dooku challenging Obi-Wan, to have that war, the Battle of Geonosis. There's so much, and it's just sci-fi to its core, but remaining that fantasy of Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for it to be celebrated because I think it is probably the most critically disliked film. It definitely has taken the most battering. A lot of times when fans are ranking, it is the lowest. It's still very often you can just see drive-by, you know, insults on social media of like, well, of course that film's garbage, right? It's in some ways the Star Wars story that I want to, you know, go, hey. Watch out for my buddy. But I also know from doing Force Center and getting to hear from listeners, even though it is the most challenged film, millions of people love it mm-hmm. and celebrate it. And so much important moments in that film. Yoda's lightsaber, right, is from Attack of the Clones. Padme is obviously great in Phantom Menace, but the amount where she is just on point about everything in Attack of the Clones is so great. Just the huge amount of lore of how the Jedi function, Jango and Boba, where the clones came from. There's so much in this film to love. And I definitely do have my critiques and some moments that are challenging, but just in terms of pure fandom, I like watching every scene. Like every, when I sat, I can't remember what we're recording, but I watched it in its entirety just a little while ago, and it's like every scene that came up was like, ah, but I really love this scene. I really, wait a minute. I love every scene.
That journey begins where, for me, where I always reference the seismic charges, but as being my favorite sound in Star Wars, but just Padme's ship flying into course in the beginning, the sounds and the look and the feel, like it starts there for me. And to be able to celebrate all of that will be fun. And it's also just a crazy, crazy passage of time.
It is a crazy, painful passage of time. I'm not looking forward to that constant reminder, but what are you going to do? But yeah, I think I'll be really interested to see, like, I'm sure Lucasfilm will support it with, you know, some action figures, some retrospectives, all that kind of thing. I think it will be celebrated, and I'm really happy for the people who grew up with it and didn't have to grow up with some of the baggage of people disliking it and just enjoyed it and played Attack of the Clones on the playground. I'm super excited for them to be able to celebrate it as well. But I also think you were talking about on our last News and Cues episode about really reflecting on how much Lucas just is the creator of one of the most popular things ever, and also just this guy who made a weird thing he likes.
Yeah.
And Attack of the Clones is one of the most, like, that is an auteur film. Like, I like this stuff.
Yep.
And I'm putting it in a movie. And yep. Attack of the Clones feels like no holds barred Lucas Star Wars. And I hope there's some discussion and celebration of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love, hope George comes around to share some of that too.
Oh, that would be absolutely great. And lots of new Kenobi with the long hair action figures. So speaking of celebrations, Star Wars Celebration is in theory happening in Anaheim. We hope, of course, that it all does happen exactly as planned, assuming it does indeed happen and we can all make it. Ken, what are you looking forward to at Celebration?
I mean, just being there might be the big victory this time around. I think it's perfect that, I wish it wasn't delayed from 2021. The state of the world forces it, so I would never celebrate having that the need to move it. But it got moved, and now it's here 2022, currently scheduled to happen. What a year for it to happen, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, I had been talking to some folks that I knew who used to be around kind of that convention planning there over Lucasfilm, and they were like, yeah, you know, there were some cool things, but, you know, was an off year for a lot of things. 2019, we had, you know, had that little thing, or Rise of Skywalker we're building to, and Mando and everything. 2022, we got a boatload of Star Wars to discuss, clearly, which is what the whole episode is about. And to have just that every nook and cranny of that convention be talking about new Star Wars, that's a perfect, perfect timing. And I'm excited to just live in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can't even imagine, you know, the excitement for what is happening right now, what is just about to happen, what is, you know, around the corner with a, you know, a big Ahsoka live action panel. Like, yeah, that's the amount to be celebrated at Star Wars Celebration is really a lot. I think, as you said, just being there, being the celebration is so great. The things that I'm really looking forward to is not only the big panels and the big news, but talking with the other fans, you know, reacting to whatever the big news is, just kind of in the moment right away.
Mm-hmm.
That was so much fun after the Rise of Skywalker trailer and Mando at the last one. But the biggest thing for me is if Anaheim is set up the same as Chicago, is being able to get a vastly overpriced beer in a plastic cup and then wander around a hall seeing all of those action figures.
Yeah.
Man, beer and action figures on the show floor. That's one of my happiest places.
I'm telling you, all those wonderful things we experienced in 2019, you, me, and Brian Ward running around the floor drinking and getting figures. That is one for the books, and I hope we do that again.
Absolutely. I have high, high hopes. So what are your hopes for announcements about the next big screen in movie theaters type of projects? Are you okay if we just don't hear anything else in 2022? What do you want to hear?
Well, I'm really hoping these, you know, a secret trilogy has already been filmed, don't you know, rumors. I doubt them. I doubt them to my core. I also want to believe them with every ounce of my being. I would love if they're suddenly like, surprise, we do have the Old Republic, or they do have the story of the Jedi Order. I'm there for that. Obviously I'd like a little clarity. I'm fine with whatever comes down, the pipeline, and I'm fine with the mystery. Like, it, I don't know what the Taika Waititi movie is until it's time, or the Feige. I don't need that answered, but a little clarity on is it going to happen? What's going to happen? What's coming? Like, I want the announcement to be like, don't worry, something's coming. I take that. And something concrete that I can actually believe in again. I believe we're going to see Star Wars in the theater again. I'm not worried about that. But less about what it's about, but just is there going to be something?
Yeah, I think clarity is great. It's understandable to me that things are a little unclear right now, because there is not only all the creative concerns, but there's also just kind of the state of the industry between the streaming services and COVID, and different companies trying releases that are just theaters, or releases that are theater and streaming service. And how does that work with timing and everything? I think it's understandable that it's taking a little bit of time to get that clarity, but I think a lot of people would really love just knowing what's next.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the announcement I would like the most is if the rumors were true and they have an Old Republic movie that can be the next big Star Wars thing in theaters. Mm. Not an adaptation of existing stories, but just playing in this era where there are many, many Jedi and many, many Sith running around in conflict. We get to meet a few Jedi and a few Sith who are our perspective characters. I think it's so great for the big screen because it is clearly explosive. It is, you know, a potential war between the blue and green sabers, and, you know, and the red sabers, you know, that is so clearly a large spectacle. You won't get the like, oh, this should have been a Disney Plus show as much. Right.
Right.
And then for me, it just continues to be, this is a great balance of old and new of, yeah, it's a conflict between Jedi and Sith, but it's in a whole different timeline. And it's this whole different era of fighting where there's many more Sith. The idea of seeing lots of Sith is just really compelling.
Yeah. And again, I still think that is of all the, you know, if you're looking at individual films, it's a little bit different. I'm open to that. But yeah, if the next big thing, so to speak, in Star Wars, that era is probably the one that makes the most sense still for me.
Yeah. Very exciting for me. I also wanted to ask you about good old 2022. What else could Lucasfilm announce that would make you the absolute happiest? And I'm not asking for realistic predictions now. I'm saying absolutely, maybe not even happen, just would make you incredibly happy if it had any relationship to reality or not.
Oh man. Cause I simply go to like TV show ideas. Give me Infest Nest and the Cloud Riders, the 9-part documentary series. I want stuff like that. But in terms of, almost to your original point of could this, you know, we don't know, this could be the biggest year of Star Wars yet, and the last time we get a year like Star Wars, right? If maybe towards the end, they're like, you know what, we're going to put this out here. 2023, going to be just as good. And 2024, and still go. That's the kind of, not that we're going to, you know, probably come into like an investor day or something like that, but versus an individual project. Because I kind of feel as though, other than, again, I could run down the list of shows and characters and ideas that I'd love to see in Star Wars. We've got so much. We got a theme park. We got a hotel, a cruise ship, whatever you want to. If you got the money, you can enjoy Star Wars, right? You can go build a lightsaber. You can get a Ronto wrap. We are living in a wonderful world of Star Wars. But to know that it's still going to go strong because it's working and the fans love it and the numbers are there. Even the cold, hard numbers we don't want to focus on with the money and everything. All of it is there and it's working and we're still going strong. I'd love that in some kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is very likely. I know it's been very dramatic in the first half of our podcast and saying 2022 might be the only year of this. 2023 already has a lot, you know, it already got all those shows in the pipeline. So I think that will definitely happen. But I think then going into the future, the amount of shows on the streaming service could potentially contract. Yeah. So I think your view of like what you want is just to know Star Wars is solid for a real long time is good.
Yeah. Absolutely. That the joy and love we feel for it is not a it's not a unique thing. It's a shared thing. Like we always talk about, like it's going good and we feel it and it's working. And, here we go. Buckle up, baby. Cause we're in for a long ride.
Yep, yep. Buckle up, baby. The Lando show is still coming eventually. Right. We'll hear more about. Yeah, I would love an Enfys Nest show. I'd love a horror show or movie, horror in Star Wars. A lot of people like that. I would love Kira back on the screen. You know, she's been rampaging through the comics. I'd love her back on the screen. Amelia Clark back on the screen as Kira. So, and some of those things are like, yeah, you know, possible. Predictions, great. In terms of a thing that I just really want from the bottom of my heart as a fan that is most likely absolutely not going to happen next year is the Sith throne room on Exegol 3¾ playset.
Love that.
I really want I want that to be the HasLab project. Again, this is not a prediction, except for I will predict this is not going to happen. You get that whole big arena. Get Clarm Palpatine hanging in his almond harness. You get restored Emperor, where the power of two has made him one nice outfit. You get a Ben Solo figure finally. Rey battered the Sovereign Protectors, the new Emperor's Royal Final Order guards there. All those characters, you hit a button and you can make it crumble, and part of the structure falls on the little plastic heads of Sith cultists.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Could we also get I want that John Williams rock opera Rey's theme that plays during that. That's one of
absolutely. There should you put your two AA, AAA batteries in there, whatever it is, and you hit the button on the plastic, and that plays. Yeah.
Oh God, yeah. sign me up. I'm a backer.
Excellent. Well, we'll get that going. It's that easy. Anyway, there's a ton of other stuff to look forward to. There's always so much to talk about, but the Lego Skywalker Saga video game is coming out. Many more comic books, art of books, resource books, other action figures, Funko Pops, cruise ships, theme park lands, all that stuff. Out of all that other stuff that we don't have time to discuss individually, anything that you're particularly excited for?
I am excited for the Lego Skywalker Saga game because I do love those Lego games, and the Star Wars ones kind of launched that, the game franchise there. So I'd love to go back to that. Yeah, you're talking about the abundance of more of those coffee table books that we love so much. I forgot, like, the battles that the book about the battles that turned the tide in the galaxy or whatever. I forgot that came out. I just ordered that this week.
There's so much.
There's so much. For Christmas I got the Star Wars Archives prequel era one book, the one that you can also use to squish tofu or as a weapon, a shield if you need. I just looking forward to more of that and just rolling around in this blanket of Star Wars, the same blanket I've had since I was a kid, literally and figuratively here, and just keep enjoying this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited to forget that things are coming out and going, oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, trying to make time to enjoy them. I am excited for the Lego Skywalker game because it just does look really fun, those trailers, to tie it all together and be able to play everything from the scenes you've played a million times in the original trilogy to the scenes you've never played from the sequels.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. The other thing I'm very excited for is all of the action figures I've already pre-ordered to come to my home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I recently got the Boba Fett 3¾ vintage from his look in Mandalorian. That should be coming to my home along with the same Boba Fett in retro style. So I'm looking forward to just every day going to the mailbox and going, do I have a Boba Fett today?
Today, the day, just like a mail away as a kid.
Exactly. Is this the day Boba Fett will come? As we wrap up here, I just wanted to take it back to the land of feelings, Ken. What do you want to get out of Star Wars on a personal level in 2022? You know, what are your hopes for yourself as a fan or as a person? What do you want to get out of Star Wars?
You know, I think I feel as though I've grown and changed as a person a lot last couple of years. And a lot of that comes from Star Wars. A lot of it comes from breaking Star Wars down on a thematic level and connecting it to our own lives. And that's something we've always done here at Force Center. But I think as the world turned and did it turn the last couple of years, I found myself taking more from the lessons of Star Wars more than any other point in my life. I think and Star Wars hits you when you need it, no matter the age. And Star Wars is so big. It is not this silly fantasy kids film. It's partly that, but it's no longer that. It's no longer contained to a pop culture shelf from your youth. It keeps going and it keeps growing. And you can find something in it for you that will potentially change the way you look at the world, and change the way you see the world, and change the way you move through the world. And Star Wars has absolutely done that for me, going back to late 2019 to where I am now. I hope that continues to happen in areas that I don't even know. And maybe it's less of my views of the world, but maybe it's views of myself and confidence and goals and relationships and how can I improve things. And I think it's not just silly to think that Star Wars inspires that in all of us if you're a fan and connect with it on that level. So I'm hoping that does that. And I hoping I'm continued to be continually surprised by this franchise I've grown up with.
I think that is very well said. And I definitely agree with you. I'm looking forward to more of the kind of big ideas of how to look at the world, how to look at myself. And these are incredibly difficult times for everybody. And I think it is important that we acknowledge that and live with that and find ways to move forward. And I have had moments where the silly space fantasy have really helped me, where I've been able to recognize, I'm coming from a place of fear on this, and that's what's holding me back from doing this thing I want. And if I push past the fear, that doesn't just mean what I'm trying to do is going to automatically be a success. But if I live with that little spark of hope, that's so much better than living with that fear.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the kind of ideas that you know, will help me, to send an email or take a walk around the block or remember that I really, you know, owe something to somebody else to help somebody if I can. And, you know, all those things. And it's exciting with the amount of Star Wars storytelling coming, thinking, what kind of ideas are really going to be ideas that I can think about, turn over in my mind, and hopefully help me deal with life and help me be a better person, if at all possible.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like I was saying at the top, just also like just joy, because some of it is just silly and fun or weird or just compelling or just like it aesthetically speaks to you on some deep level, and you just see a weird creature. Or, you know, as you were saying, we're recording this on Monday. We haven't seen Boba Fett yet, but like, do you like seeing a girl who looks like Joan Jett on a speeder bike? Is there something about that that's just, you know, intriguing to you and you want to see more? Like, just enjoy the joy. And I'm looking forward to having Star Wars be there for me in emotional ways, but also in moments to just be like, let me look at that action figure again, because I really like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then my final thing is my hopes in 2022 is actually shelves, literal shelves for some of my action figures. I think I can accomplish that.
As someone who is heading to a big box store to get some shelving units to put in a closet, and I have to measure some of my Lego Star Wars sets to see if they'll fit on top of it. I know what you need, Jess.
I need shelves that can handle action figure volumes of this magnitude, and I think I can find them.
Yeah, love that.
All right, any other final thoughts from you?
No, I'm going to be interested to occasionally I'll poke back at some old Force Center episodes, and I cringe sometimes at the sound quality or things I'm saying or the ums and ahs and the rambles, but I love also seeing just some, like I said up top, how wrong we are, but also maybe how close we are to being right about not just predictions, but just what Star Wars will continue to mean to us. And I'm curious at the end of 2022, looking back at this, what we'll be thinking. And I imagine it's going to be joy, but I can't wait to get to the end of it. I'm going to treasure every day, but I can't wait to get to the end of this and go, wow, December and January, Ken, you cannot believe what you're going to see. You will never fathom what you are about to see in Star Wars.
Yeah, it is really fun to be on the precipice of not knowing yet what we are going to know in the very soon future, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and now I've really backed myself into a corner and really need to get shelves. Which I'm happy to put that pressure on myself. I don't want to be an always with him, it can't be done. So I can do this. I can get shelves.
I can do it.
I believe. I believe. Well, that is our big look at what is coming in 2022. Some thoughts as fans and some just general punditry thoughts about what's coming. We're excited to go on the journey with all of you. Thank you so much for listening. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I'd love to. We are the Force Center Podcast feed, and we are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well, where we broadcast audio versions of our episodes there. If you take your shows that way, podcast page, Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Stay tuned. We got some new places coming soon. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter if you so choose. From there, you get access to our Discord. Don't forget, right now, we currently have a show on The Companion called Databank Dive. Every week, we go into a little interesting item, character, location in Star Wars, and we discuss it, discuss what it means to us, and just have some fun celebrating the little weird corners of Star Wars. It's exclusive to The Companion app. Details are on our tweets when we promote the show. You can follow me at Ken Nabzok or go to my website, KenNabzok.com. I have no updates on live comedy shows because I don't know when I'll be doing it again soon. Hopefully I will. I'll update you. Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, well, I have the same update about live performance. I really want to get back to performing, but I watch these spaces. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other adventures and my other podcast, Obsessed, comedy albums, all sorts of stuff, and hopefully future shows. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for my vintage Boba Fett action figure that will arrive in 2022, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.